Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. It's episode 185. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, I haven't heard from you in a while. You said you've been really busy. How you doing? What's going on?
I'm good. I'm good. I guess I'm busy. I feel more like the world's busy. Sports, I can't say it's on hiatus because the NFL is up, but you know, the other three leagues are off, and it just felt like a good place to do a deep dive into politics for no particular reason.
Well, maybe one particular reason.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. How'd that turn out? I guess we don't know yet.
Well, CNN just called Arizona for Biden, so hey, we'll wait and see.
Yeah, you know, I think we're past the calling states for Biden point. I think if these are being called, then Trump is ghost calls.
Like, you could see that he got the text, but he's not responding.
He read it. It says he read it. So, you know, back to school and stuff, just, you know, life stuff, buddy. How about you? Your life's always, like, always more interesting than mine. What have you been up to?
You know what? It's not that exciting, really. I closed the cottage a couple weeks ago, so that's sad. Doing the show now for 3 hours because Leafs lunch is on hiatus. So we went to 3 hours right when all the sports went away. But I find there's still tons. I still find at the end of the show, I'm like, oh, I never got to this or this. So there's still enough steady stream.
Quick question before you go on.
Yeah.
We never got to this and this. Is it always sports stuff that you didn't get to?
Well, I mean, usually the sports stuff sometimes doesn't make it because I got to talk about what's going on in my life.
Yeah, right. And also what's happening on AMC.
Hey, today it's top five movies involving a hooker because Pretty Woman is on AMC during my show.
Good one. Oh, man. I wish you would have let me know. Okay, let's come back to that later. I'll jot down notes instead of listening to you throughout the pod.
Okay, we'll do hot hooker talk. But one thing politically that I'm going to miss... one thing I'm happy about is with Biden in, I hope this starts up again teams going to the White House where they don't feel like social media is going to get angry at them, mostly because I miss presidents mispronouncing the names of hockey players, and I'm hoping we can have it again.
You raise a good point because half the country hates Biden or the Democrats or however you want to express it. So... I got to believe there's a lot. Is it safer to say that the Republicans are more likely to swallow their tongues on these athletes than it would be the other way around?
I'm not comparing. Sorry, finish that thought.
I was just going to say they'll just go along with it to avoid the hassle. The Republican athletes will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And like, I don't ever remember before Trump was president. I don't remember anyone being upset with a team visiting the White House, whether it was Clinton or Bush or Obama.
Tim Thomas didn't want to go see Obama.
What's that?
Tim Thomas didn't want to go see Obama.
But yeah, I guess that's the one. So I just want them back. I want presidents mispronouncing the names of Russian defensemen.
It was always so awkward when they clearly didn't know anything about the team. I'm pretty happy in certain ways. I guess politics and sports have to necessarily connect, and it's a good thing they do. In other ways, it's ridiculous. I still don't think anthems should be played before games. I don't know why teams go to the White House. All of this just seems irrelevant. You know, Academy Award winners don't go to the White House. It's not like when Gravity wins Best Picture, all of a sudden George Clooney and Sandra Bullock are up there shaking hands with the president. It makes no sense to me. Like, sports just exist in their own weird realm for a lot of things, but this is one where it's totally not necessary.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know. I kind of like the team going to the White House. It's less about politics, more like It's like this acknowledgement to the rest of the country. You know, it's like an attaboy. It's like a pat on the back, but just at a bigger level.
I don't know. I don't feel like these athletes are starved for pats on the back. I don't know if they need to go to the. It seems like it's more trouble than it's worth. I could understand a national team going if it was the Olympics. That I would understand because you're competing for your country. That's a totally different thing. But professionals, you know, if a CEO closes a big deal or it has a massive IPO, you know, you don't go to the. I guess you probably do go to the White House and get congratulated. It just happens behind the scenes. But you know, it feels weird that we've decided that somehow sports has something to do with politics. You know, and the president. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope to see it back. But if it does come back, I doubt it'll impact you very much.
I agree 100%. I'm going to go the opposite way. Let's just bring back the national anthem for everything. Like, you got to start the school day with it. Okay, fine. They do that. That's good. But how about just we bring it back before movies, before I sit down and eat a meal at a restaurant. I need the wait staff to come and sing the anthem before I can dig into my turkey pot pie. Ooh. Everywhere I go, before, if I'm in the grocery store and I'm lining up and I'm not in the 8 and under category for items. If I'm, you know, someone's got to sing the anthem while we're boxing up my groceries. Just everywhere. Make Canada great again.
They used to do it on TV. Remember when there was no shows after midnight and they play the national anthem and then the screen would just go boo, or you'd get the snow.
You're totally right. Do you remember how sad it was when you were a kid, when you woke up early and TV hadn't started yet?
I know. It's true. Or you'd stay up late enough to watch TV go away. My God, 1982, a weird time.
You make a great point, actually, about the idea. Like, it was one thing in the morning, but it was mostly just sad because you were waiting for cartoons to start. And they were usually like the crappy educational ones at 6 a.m. Like, you had to watch the show, and there were always two smiling people trying to teach you to read.
Yeah.
You know, look, I just want to watch people punching each other. Can we get to 7 a.m.?
Yeah.
But when you were a kid, it was a big deal if you could outlast TV.
Yeah.
Past TV. Yeah.
It was an accomplishment, like having like a sleepover. And it's like, that's the goal. We're going to drink a lot of Jolt Cola. We're going to stay up until TV goes away.
And then the idea of the late night movie means nothing now because there's 24/7 movies. But do you remember when you were a kid, how great it was when you actually stayed up at one of these sleepovers or whatever? And then at 1 a.m. on channel 47, they would have like the crappy horror movie or some kind of like softcore porn there. You were giggling because, you know, there were girls in bikinis running around and it was 2 a.m.
Of course. Bob. And the funny thing is, you said the right number. It was channel 47. And this is really going inside. You've got to be of a certain age. You've got to live in a certain part of Southern Ontario. It was channel 47. And that one time you actually saw a naked boob, you would tell your friends about it. And like, that's all you talked about for the week. Like that, you know, that was the moment.
You know, to your point about anticipation, you would also have to watch like 35, 40, 50 minutes before it actually happened. And you would, a movie you don't care about, possibly not even in the language you speak.
Rarely.
Right? But you would just wait so patiently, like a dog waiting for its owner to come back home, sitting by the door.
That's a perfect analogy. And that's how I learned how to speak Italian.
All right. So let's start with some sports. Where do you want to start?
Well, you know, you threw out some ideas and you wanted to talk a little bit about Fred VanVleet. So why don't we start local? We start there. Free agency is about a week away. The draft is in about 4 or 5 days. VanVleet was on the JJ Redick podcast and said, "Hey, you know, I'm looking to get paid. I'm looking to get mine." And the one thing I noticed, maybe 25 years ago, people would be upset. I don't think anyone is bothered. I think everyone is rooting for Fred VanVleet. He's like, yeah, go get your money.
Well, and especially him.
Yeah.
Because he so clearly worked and basically crafted himself through an amazingly professional attitude to becoming a bona fide NBA starter. I don't know. Fred I wanted to talk a bit about him because it's assumed that it would be better for the Raptors if he stayed. Is there an argument where there isn't, if it's not better for the Raptors, if they have to pay him a lot of money, which they will? Is this the year where maybe you keep the powder dry because the next round of free agents, maybe you can grab one and you're looking at rebuilding the team? Like, they're a playoff team even if Fred's not on it, but they're not a championship team if Fred resigns.
Yes. So
I feel like it matters one way or the other this year. But if you're looking ahead to what you might accomplish in a year's time, I'm speaking specifically of Giannis, but, you know, maybe even this Victor Oladipo scenario, maybe there's a way that you sign him in a year if he wants to play here. Like, there'll be better players available than Fred VanVleet, but there's no guarantee you could get them. So, bird in the hand, maybe you wait a little bit. Like, what do you think, Matt? I feel like we're just so jumping to conclusions that we have to sign Fred that I'm not sure I agree.
It's about trying to walk that. Can you find a way to walk that fine line of satiating Fred VanVleet's financial desires that are legitimate and at the same time keep yourself with enough flexibility to get a Giannis type? That's really what it's all about, because I look at VanVleet as a bit of a bridge from the end of Lowry to, you know, that next generation. If you're a guy like Giannis, is Toronto as attractive if Fred VanVleet isn't there and there's a lesser known guard? Lowry is going to be in his late 30s by then. You know, like, VanVleet is almost part of the package of come here because we got Siakam, we got OG, you got Nurse, you got Masai Ujiri, and you got Fred VanVleet. So that's really the question. Can you keep him happy and still have flexibility?
All right. So the reason I wanted to bring this up is, I think the answer is probably no, although I would need to do a closer Blake Murphy style deep dive into the cap to really understand it. But it's always dangerous when you say, let's answer this philosophically, because facts are useful too. But in theory, the NBA is filled with competent starting point guards. It is not a hard role to fill via free agency or trade, not the way some of the other ones are, right?
Correct.
And I don't think that Fred is going to become a dominant point guard. He's small. He's already 26. I think he's built himself into a good NBA player. But to overpay for a good player when you could simply trade, draft, or via free agency get a competent one and save that cash for a superstar, because we know Pascal's not going to be that guy, or at least we assume he's not going to be like a bona fide alpha. He feels like a perfect beta player. So we're still in search of that alpha. And until you get it, and Masai Ujiri knows this better than anyone, you know, hence the deal for Kawhi Leonard, you can be a fun team to watch. You can be a good team to watch. You will never be a winning team until you have an amazing player. And I don't know if Fred helps more or hurts more in the search for that.
Probably hurts. To win a championship, VanVleet's got to be your fourth best player, which is what he was when the Raptors won the title. Kawhi was better, Siakam was better, Lowry was better, and then at number four was VanVleet. What the Raptors need to do first is they need to find a guy who is clearly better than Siakam. If they want to win a championship, it starts there. And that journey probably means saying goodbye to Fred VanVleet, which stinks because we love his story. His story is in some ways more impressive than his production. And he had, and having said that, he had a great year until the Celtics series. He was great against Golden State. He was great down the stretch against Milwaukee. But the story of him might be better than the production of him.
And it's easy to fall in love with it. Like, look, I love Fred VanVleet. And like most of these players are saying, I hope he goes and gets paid somewhere. I was happy when Bismack Biyombo went and got tons of money from Orlando. But I'm glad we didn't pay him that.
Yep.
Now, here's the difference. You figured the Biyombo bubble would probably burst, which it did. I think Fred VanVleet's going to be a good player for no matter who he goes and plays. But, you know, like let's take Drew Holiday for a second. Drew Holiday is a damn good point guard. And it's the kind of thing, like, you're in the league, and if you're in that market, you go, oh, our guy's really good, you know, because you see them play all the time. But when you don't see these guys play all the time, you kind of forget, like, there's a lot of good point guards out there. The league is filled with them. You know, could we get by with the Dennis Schroeder? Like, you know, in theory, like, just some guy who's just a stopgap until you put your stars together. And then you get a veteran to help run the team. it's not a crazy thing to imagine Masai wanting to do, you know, especially because Serge, his ticket's up. Who knows what's going to happen? I'm assuming you're hearing all the rumors of where he's going. And, you know, they got a lot of, they're going to have a lot of turnover anyway. Maybe this is the year where they just suck it up and reload for 2021-22.
The main point here is, and you sort of alluded to it, don't overpay for good. Mm-hmm. Overpay for great, but don't overpay for good. And Van Vliet is good. And a team like Atlanta or Detroit or New York, it makes sense for them maybe to overpay because they're not trying to compete for the next couple of years. And you know, Van Vliet can help younger players. He can help you win in the regular season. You know, don't overpay. The Raptors are in a position where they shouldn't be overpaying for good.
This is probably a bad analogy, but it's the one that just popped into my mind. You remember Andre Miller?
Yep.
Andre Miller to me was like professionally good point guard. Like nobody ever said on any of the good teams that he was on, Andre Miller's our best player. But they also never said, man, that guy's bringing us down. Not until he got older anyway. And maybe Fred VanVleet's going to be like that kind of guy where you go, you know, you add him to pretty much any roster and he's going to fit and he's going to be good and he's going to yield results. But as we've learned the hard way with the Leafs contracts, when you overvalue the people that you want to value, it really forces you to make tough decisions elsewhere. And Fred just, to me, isn't the answer. You got to save your money for the answer. The NBA is not that hard to figure out. It's not like some crazy algebra problem. It's a resources problem in the NBA. The plan is pretty simple, kind of like it is in the NFL. Let's get a star. You know, find a quarterback. Just get that guy. Build around him.
And the problem with the NBA is there's about 10 of those guys, those true, legit guys you need to win a championship, and 3.5 of them are in L.A., Paul George, TBA.
I know that this is silly, but let me throw this out to you. When you heard that Victor Oladipo had Toronto on a short list of teams along with New York and I think it was Miami, of places where...
Yeah, it was Miami.
He was kind of lobbying, you know, even on the floor to some of the players because he thought this was an attractive scenario for him. When you hear that, do you think, I don't care? Or does your spidey sense go off and think, how do we make that happen?
Oh, well, my first thought was, we've arrived. Mm-hmm. At what point, and listen, Oladipo, let's still wait and see on him. He's, you know, serious injuries, but when fully healthy, he's a very good player. He's not a number one player for a championship team. But the point is that for ages, the conversation was never a very good semi-star player wants to come to Toronto. We've never had that before. So I was tickled pink just that Toronto was even mentioned.
Yeah, it's a great point about the culture that they've built here and that, you know, credit to Masai and to MLSE and to the players as well who carry themselves with a lot of dignity. So, yeah, it feels like it's a smart, as long as we keep Masai and we keep this culture together, it feels like smart players will want to come here. And that's really exciting. You're 100% right. I love Victor Oladipo's game. When he's healthy, I think, you know, he's not electrifying, but he's really damn good.
Yes.
And he also has an incredible work ethic, which I love. And the older I get, the more I think, like, if you're going to build a team, it actually starts between the ears. Most of these guys are good athletes. Who's got the desire to win? So I love that aspect of it, too. Like, if he thinks I want out of Indiana because it's a shit show, I don't blame him. If I was at a bad company, I'd want out, too.
As long as, I agree. As long as he does, just don't do the Anthony Davis thing. That for me, that always rubbed me the wrong way. But yes, if your contract's up, you want to go somewhere else, go somewhere else.
And I wonder if he can even force them to make that deal this year. I mean, Indiana, if he goes, is in a full rebuild, which is great because I thought they were a team on the rise with Sabonis and him. So just one few. We have to worry about Brooklyn, but now we don't have to worry about Indiana probably. So, you know, you lose one problem and gain another.
Yeah, well, God, Brooklyn. That's going to be the ultimate chemistry experiment.
Crazy. I can't decide whether or not they're going to be the most fun team in the NBA to watch or if they're going to feel like that Lakers team when they brought on Dwight Howard and Steve Nash.
I think they'll have more success than that Lakers team. But for me, like I'm going to root for Steve Nash, obviously, and I like D'Antoni, but yeah, I'm not a big fan of either Kyrie or Kevin Durant, so they're not exactly going to be a team where I'm going to be putting their pennant in my bedroom.
This is very complicated for you, because you love Steve Nash and you have a lot of respect for D'Antoni, but their two stars are two of your three most hated stars in the NBA, along with Carmelo.
Yep. Yeah, there's the unholy alliance. There's the axis of evil, the Bermuda Triangle of players I'm just not rooting for.
Okay, so if Fred VanVleet costs a boatload of cash, but he's willing to come here, do you do it?
Only if there's still a path for a Giannis. If this means you can't get Giannis, then no.
We need an Uncle Dennis. Does Giannis have an Uncle Dennis? We need somebody we can call and just ask straight up. So, like, does he like us or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we need to get full high school. We need to pass him a note with a checklist on it that says, do you want to come to Toronto? Check yes, check no. we just need answers.
Yeah. Total. Hey, let me throw a question to you.
Okay.
Bigger impact in the world of sports. The Giannis decision, whether or not to sign the Supermax with the Bucks, or is it the Trevor Lawrence decision, whether or not to leave Clemson or to stay another year?
That's a great question. I would say the Trevor Lawrence question, an entire franchise, an entire league really rests on his decision. If he's as good as people say, seems like he is. I'm going to say the Trevor Lawrence one. What do you think?
I go back and forth because Trevor Lawrence could help rescue New York.
That's right. Like, yeah. If he goes to the Jets or if he goes to the Giants, that's what I mean. Our whole league changes. Like, you know, I guess if Giannis went to the Knicks, that would be a league changer. Maybe even if he went to Chicago, that would be a league changer, but not really.
Yeah.
I guess it's like the answer to your question is, if whoever goes to New York is going to be the answer.
I think with Giannis, it appears like it's either Milwaukee, Miami, Toronto. Those seems like, you know, the sort of places that are out there. And he'd be a perfect fit, obviously, in Toronto or Miami. But yeah, it's one I wonder about. And every time Trevor Lawrence says, I haven't made up my mind, I think that's him just saying, hey, Jets, fire Adam Gase. Go hire that Eric Bieniemy guy, and maybe I will leave. Maybe I'll leave Clemson.
Is Dabo Sweeney going to be the coach of the Jets?
God, I hope not. I just the record of college coaches working in the NFL. I don't think it's that great. I think, you know, you take an Eric Bieniemy and what he's done in Kansas City. It seems like it's his time to get the job. So that's what I'm hoping for.
He had such a great nickname too, Eric the Enemy Bieniemy.
Oh no, it was Eric Sleeping with Bieniemy was the Chris Berman one on him.
So good, Sleeping with Bieniemy. You know what? The kids today will never appreciate how great Chris Berman was when he first broke on the scene. Just how it was. Frank Thackeray.
I miss Berman and Tom Jackson in the mid-90s were bleeping rock stars.
You and I, even though we didn't know each other, we had something very important in common, which is we didn't watch Canadian sports television. We watched American sports television, whatever we could get up here.
Yep.
I watched the CNN Nick Charles and Fred Hickman show. Did you?
Oh, yeah.
With Van Earl Wright with deep over the wall in left field.
I used to watch the Fabulous Sports Babe when we had a legal satellite in the mid-90s.
Ooh, a legal satellite. Nice.
Oh, here, the best.
Can I throw at some Chris Berman's?
Yep.
I got to find some good ones here. Mike Pepperoni Piazza.
Yep.
So silly. Moises Skip to Maya Lou.
Yep.
Joseph Live and Let It Die.
Ah, oh, that's a good one.
That's the best one so far. Chuck, New Kids on the Knoblock. That one's pretty good. Oh, Jake, Daylight Coming, You Got a Delome?
See, this, like, and especially before, like, Twitter, you know, like this was the highest of entertainment.
You know, you make a great point how this must sound so boring to people who grew up with Twitter, because everybody sounds this way all the time.
Yeah. But in 1998, we didn't have any of that.
Hang on, one last one, okay? Yeah. You'll appreciate this. I watched the Super Bowl with you that night that we had the Super Bowl party at your place, and we almost all died from food. Tampa Bay. Mike, you're in good hands with Allstott.
That's perfect. That is a good one. The funny thing is about that Super Bowl is I feel bad. I guess back then it was some wives and girlfriends when every guy would come home and just go to bed with the meat sweats. The worst.
So gross. Like you roll right into bed. That was the Tampa Bay and Oakland Barrett Robinson.
Yeah. Yep. Barrett Robbins, yeah, the center for the Raiders.
Yeah, they went MIA before the game. Yeah, it was a terrible, terrible Super Bowl. Okay, so DeMar DeRozan possibly to the Lakers.
Love it. Yeah, it makes so much sense. DeMar DeRozan, your number three guy. They never fully trusted Kyle Kuzma, and it'd be ironic if LeBron wins another title. If he helps DeMar DeRozan win a title, since LeBron James would crush his dreams every year.
He becomes your Blue Edwards. He becomes your Jeff Hornacek. Like, who's that third guy? The classic third guy. Yeah. Man, I'm really aging. I'm really dating myself on this episode. Like, telling Mike Allstott jokes and making references to Blue Edwards.
We're skewing young here, Bob. We are we're skewing young on the pod. How about go with he's Eric Gordon, Jamal. I'm trying to think of a classic number three guy.
Do they even have classic number three guys anymore?
No, not the way it used to be.
Yeah, because you got to power load so much of your cap into those two guys.
Yeah,
it feels like there's a nice surprise who's your third, but not. It's not an institutional piece the way it used to be.
And by the way, Hornacek, classic number three guy. You had Stockton and Malone. Who is that number three?
So true. Okay, so you wanted to talk about the Jays.
I wanted to get a little bit into the Blue Jays. But before we do, I want to give a quick shout out to our lawyer, our sponsor on the podcast, Jeff Pollock. If you need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. The testimonial is a simple one. He's helped us out. He's helped me out. He's a good friend. He's damn good at his job. It's a small law firm. You will not get lost. You'll get treated with just crazy respect. So shout out to our lawyer, our friend, Jeff Pollock. The Toronto Blue Jays, all the talk about the free agents out there and the teams that could be vying for them, Toronto is now one of the teams that gets mentioned. When has that ever happened? I think the most important thing to remember about the Blue Jays is Biggio, Bichette, Guerrero, and Pearson. Those guys are supposed to be the core. Those guys are supposed to be playing every day. All of them are making well under $1 million for the next couple of years because of, you know, the young players. This is like the Seahawks with Russell Wilson. Their best run was when he was on a rookie contract. The Jays are in a great position where they could go out and continue to spend.
And they seem like they are going to do that. And we got Ryu for another year. They've got a potentially nice year looking ahead at them. But the question always remains with Toronto is who wants to come here? Mm-hmm. I suppose if you overpay, maybe if they know that they're not going to have to go to Toronto, if you tell them, yeah, you're playing for Toronto, but sign a short deal and you'll probably only ever have to go far north as Buffalo, maybe that'll help.
I don't know. Well, actually, I think Toronto's more of a selling point than Buffalo. The taxes would be around the same, and athletes love to party here in Toronto. I think it's better than what it was. I mean, you know, certainly it's easier to get an athlete to go to Miami, L.A., or New York, but I just think I'd rather be in Toronto than Buffalo.
You know, I would have said that, too, until I found out how much, you know, via Chris Bosch, athletes love ESPN SportsCenter and not going through customs.
Yeah, customs is a big one. Why is that such a big deal? Like, you're on private planes.
It feels like we should be able to whisk them through. I mean, if we can get, you know, if we can get an athlete an MRI in 4 hours when everybody else has to wait 4 months, can't we whisk these guys over the border? Can't we just accept that sometimes it is good to have special privileges?
Why do you think people work hard to get rich? It's for special privileges, you know, so you can get the fast pass and go on Behemoth as many times as you want.
You know, it's funny, Matt, because everybody knows I'm joking and everybody knows you're not. Oh, man. You know, I don't know who they're going to get. I suppose DJ LeMahieu would be cool, although I think it's going to be Colton Wong once he doesn't come here, LeMahieu. The pitching one is really interesting. I get nervous about it because there's, you know, like James Paxton, everybody talks about him. I don't know. It worked out so great with Ryu. Do you have anybody you'd like to see? I'm just sort of like spitballing names.
Yeah. Here. Well, I it would mean Bo Bichette would have to move positions, but the Francisco Lindor one, though that would require a trade. I'd love that. The LeMahieu one, and I'm good. Go get Trevor Bauer for a year. You know, they need help with pitching, and the Jays are in such a unique position where the Rogers is rich. So some teams don't want to spend money. Boston is going through rebuild. So this is going to be one of the few years they probably aren't going to spend. There's going to be more players available as teams are declining options. Now is the time for the Jays to go just hog wild. Go in there, grab your, you know, find a way if you can to get Lindor, sign a couple of these free agents, and just spend lots of money. The team made the playoffs last year. My big picture is I've never seen them in this position where they can and they're willing to, and it makes sense to spend money.
I would expect they're going to bring in some players. You know, it's obviously up to those players whether they want to come here or not. But I think just the way they've handled this publicly has people feeling like they're not just a deadbeat dad of a franchise, that they've got. Yeah. Players, they've got a contractual sweet spot, as you say, and they've had some success being very cautious, but it is time now to open up, and they sound like they're willing to do it. So as a Jays fan, I am prepared to like the team they put together. I don't expect them to win, but if they don't try and they don't succeed, I'm grossed out. If they try and they don't succeed, yeah, that's life. I can live with that one. So I'm in. I'm all in on this.
Yeah. Like the three other
George Springer. I decided I don't want George Springer. No Astros.
Get out of here.
How do you feel about that? Yeah, but he's a cheater. He's a cheater.
The baseball's a game of cheating. They all cheat.
Hey, wait a minute. You can't, like, you were the number one boo the Astros guy, but you would take players from the Astros?
I would take Jeff Lunau right now. I would take him right now on this team.
Okay, I feel like this isn't going to be hard to do, but let's go here anyway. Did you boo the Astros?
I did, but I switched and I started rooting for them once the hate got to a certain level. I switched and I'm like, I'm rooting for the bad guy. I'm rooting for King Kong Bundy. Give me a five count.
Okay, but that was just a contrarian move for comedy. In your heart of hearts, you know what the Astros did was wrong. You know George Springer was one of the guys who did that and benefited from it.
And he had 12 home runs in the postseason this year.
He's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
But he's an Astro. I love the Raptors so much. And they bring in, you know, they've got a good core of people I can get behind. No Astros, no Springer.
Well, I'm a pragmatist on this, Bob. My morality's going to the side. If you can get Springer, bring it on.
Yep, that just sounds like, you know, the president. Yeah, he says a lot of stuff on Twitter, but you know, in his heart, he's going to do the right thing.
Just look at the, you know, hey, I'm fine with it. Yep.
Deal with the devil. Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Hell yeah. Well, because we can go down these morality tales where what if, you know, a player a couple years ago, you know, had a DUI. You know, that to me is you want the guy with a DUI on your team. You know, there's and listen, these players, though they weren't punished, they'll always be punished in the sense that when we think of the Astros, that there's always going to be a bit of a yeah, but. Matt, that is a powerful punishment.
How can you say they'll always be punished in the court of popular opinion when 15 seconds ago you just said you didn't care and you wanted him on the team?
No, but I'll always like when like legacy matters. And when you talk about like a Springer or a Altuve, somewhere within that first paragraph is going to be the cheating. That's going to hurt them when their careers are done. That's always going to be there. As great as A-Rod is now, there's always, and he's had a great, you know, rehabilitation. There's always a part of you that's going to be like, yeah, but that's also weirdo steroid guy.
It's funny how complicated that first paragraph is. It'll be about how he's a cheater, but also how much I want him on my team.
Yep.
Yep. I get it. I get it. What you're saying, you're keeping it real, Matt.
I want my sports feel good. I'm willing for some sacrifices.
Yes. You know, what you call sacrifices are actually what other people call compromises and hypocrisies.
Yep. Bob, I've always admitted my sports hypocrisy. I wear it proudly.
I don't need to be right. I need to be happy.
Yes, that's right. My sports life is different than my real life.
Oh, God. So hard to see how we got here as a culture. Okay, so you wanted to also talk about young quarterbacks.
I did, but before that, real quick, we sort of talked about it off the top, but how is Charlotte? How's school? How's everything going on that crazy ride?
You know, it's okay. It's a crazy ride. I think just with the announcements that are coming out now and the numbers spiking, most parents, if they're smart, are preparing for what December and January are going to look like. And I expect there's going to be a lot of home time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just what it is. It's what it has to be right now. It's exciting if there's some kind of breakthrough in terms of vaccine technology. And, you know, if 2021 is a write-off, but at least it's a write-off that finishes this off, so be it. You know, my wife has been really super amazing and helpful to help me understand the right way to look at this, which is just, this is a weird year. Prioritize health, both mental and physical, and everything else will come back around in time. And she's right. Like, you know, better to have a healthy, productive kid than a kid who's stressed out to try and keep up with an unnatural situation.
Right.
You know, it's funny. I think a lot about this with like the workplace and stuff. You and I have laughed about how managers and bosses are always sending out notes that start off with "in these difficult times" that feel
unprecedented times.
In these unprecedented times, we want you to do everything you've always done. You know, and generally speaking, I feel where we've fallen down as a culture is where we exhibit a lack of imagination, that we just simply can't function unless things are exactly the way they were yesterday. And things aren't the way they were yesterday. So to answer your question, I'm trying to use this as an opportunity to grow as an individual too. You know, like obviously it's not good. Everybody wants things to be okay and the stakes are super high, but you know, crisis also creates opportunity and they don't have to all be negative. Maybe we can come out of the other side better, more flexible people, you know?
Yes.
And certainly pass on to the next generation. Like, you know, my wife also says, and I'll drop it at this point, but she also says, it's a great opportunity for kids to learn how to demonstrate leadership in the face of not just adversity, but uncertainty, maybe more importantly. It's not just a simple cranked out Xeroxed copy of the last day. Like, they're going to have to learn to be flexible and show some character doing it. And she's right. And I thought that's true for adults and it's true for these kids. And, you know, so the answer is it's hard, but it's doable. Like, we're doing it. You know what I mean? How about you? Like, you're up at the cottage, you know, you're living your best life.
Yeah. I am like, so, I mean, there's obviously been financial hits, with COVID like everyone else, but I'm one of the lesser ones impacted by it. Like, if you did a chart, like, to me, it's you know, at the top are small business owners, restaurant owners, everyone connected with the entertainment industry, like those actors, comedians. Those are the ones who I, you know, feel so horrible for. You know, I have friends who are comedians like Sean Cullen, and I know tons of people in restaurant industries, and they are just suffering so much. I'm on the other end. I'm incredibly lucky by this. I've been able to do the show. I've been able to do it from the cottage and, you know, do it from home. So no, I'm, I've been very lucky with COVID.
You know, there's a certain degree of churn in any economy. Businesses come, businesses go, industries come and industries go. Like, that's just natural. But obviously this is a crazy accelerant and it's put a lot of people in precarious spots. When I talk about this idea of personal growth, like, I'm not unaware of the fact that that's a lot of bullshit for people who are just trying to make sure that they can keep their heads above water, you know. But maybe as a culture, it's a good lesson that, you know, this can happen to anybody at any time. And a good society is there to help other people out. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's just my opinion. You know, that's how I look at it. Like, there's a lot of things that I agree with when it comes to the conservatives. But my fundamental break is that I think that there's a collective societal responsibility to look after your neighbor. And the things that help us to do that best are the things we should do. And this is a tough one, but I hope we're all there for each other. I feel like Canadians have been better than Americans about it. The people I work with in the States, I am shocked and grossed out by how afraid to be sick they are, because they're afraid they're going to get fired. They're afraid they're going to lose money. It costs a bloody fortune to see a doctor, even for a minute. You know, the system we have is not perfect, but it's certainly... I don't know about the system of fear they got down there.
Well, I'll wrap up this thought with anyone listening. Go to your local restaurants, buy a bottle of wine when you're there, and if you can, if you got the money to go and support it. So with young quarterbacks, I'm actually going to start this by skewing old. You know who I've been thinking about a lot this last week?
Okay, hang on a second. Give me three guesses, okay?
Do it.
Jeff George.
Okay.
Too old or in the
too
right?
Too young.
Too young. Oh, so old. Slinging Sammy. Otto Graham.
No, Dan Marino.
Okay.
Over the last week, Patrick Mahomes broke his record for the quickest to 100 touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson, who's having a bad year, tied his record for the most wins after 30 games. And then last night, Phil Rivers, on the most boring looking out pass to a running back, passed Dan Marino in all-time passing yardage. And I couldn't help but think about Marino just for this fact. He put up 5,000 yards in a season. First time it was ever done. It wasn't done again until 2009. And only now, with all these rule changes, are guys catching up and breaking Dan Marino. We got a year where there's going to be 16 quarterbacks are projected to throw for 4,000 yards or more. In the entire 1980s, it was only done 13 times. So shout out to Dan Marino for putting up numbers in an era where the quarterback and receivers were treated like a piñata.
That's a well-researched, well-reasoned argument, Matt.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What does it have to do with young quarterbacks?
Nothing. I just wanted to mention Dan Marino. But you got Tua, you got Herbert, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, just all these young, like, it is, and I know part of it is because of defenses and part of it's because there's less holding calls and no fans in the stands, make it easier for young guys on the road. But we are in a golden era right now of quarterback play.
Okay. So you're right. But can I throw something out? Can I throw out the obvious caveat?
Yeah.
I feel like we've been here before and it's such a precarious spot to be in for the NFL. Like, there was a time when we thought Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III are going to be two of the greatest Hall of Fame quarterbacks who ever lived.
Yep.
And injury and circumstance just kept it from happening. So, like, you could say with those guys, okay, there's some bad luck involved, right? Pardon the pun. But then also, I just think about how every year, like, Derek Carr was going to be so great on, oh, they finally found their guy. Oh, no, Derek Carr didn't work out. Marcus Mariota, oh, you know, the Titans, they got a good one in him. Oh, no, it didn't work out. Carson Wentz, oh, my God, he's the MVP. Oh, my God, he sucks. Like, don't, it's like 13-year-old girls and their crushes. Like, just don't get too attached to anybody. They could be gone in a year.
It's a good point about the cyclical nature of it. And some of it was bad luck with RG3, with Andrew Luck. That's a fascinating one. We haven't heard a thing from him in ages.
I'm assuming he's done.
With Andrew Luck, I just want to know more about the decision. How is he now doing with his life? How is he feeling? Was it really bad head trauma? Like, I'd be curious just to have a conversation, just to ask Andrew Luck, how you doing? And you all regret your decision.
He felt like a Hall of Fame quarterback in those first couple of years, didn't he?
Yeah.
He had everything, not just the success, but the presence and the intelligence and the pedigree, the training. It was like Todd Marinovich, but it worked. Like, he just felt like he was born to do it. He was born to do it.
But, and that's why we're excited about Trevor Lawrence. This is the best pro prospect since Andrew Luck.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I remember watching him in that first year and thinking, oh my God, who is this surfer? He's good. I want to go back to this idea of the cyclical nature of quality quarterbacks, because certainly Patrick Mahomes has nothing left to prove. He's that guy. Lamar Jackson, I think, is on the cusp of us saying he's that guy. But as you said, maybe not as great this year as in other years, you know, or this other year, you know, like
he's regressed.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like we can't be on totally firm ground with him just yet. Nope. Other than Patrick Mahomes, who do you feel the most confident about that in 10 years will have been saying, man, we watched him play?
One obvious one, because he still has at least another 10 years, is Russell Wilson. He might be too old now because he's 30.
Of the guys in the league 3 years or less. And I'll even include Josh Allen in that.
I feel good about Josh Allen. Not great. I feel good. I feel great about Kyler Murray.
You feel great about him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always the injury caveat. But Chris Spielman, who played with Barry Sanders, compared Kyler Murray to Barry Sanders. Mm-hmm. I love what's going on with Joe Burrow. And Tua, just because he was so good at Alabama before that injury.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the rookies are playing with such poise, are playing so well that I think we got a chance. Like, the crazy thing is, a year from now, the New England Patriots will have the worst quarterback in their division.
Well, yeah, once Sam Darnold is gone and the Jets have drafted somebody better. Although he was picked third overall, so who knows, right? Like,
yeah.
People figured Mitch Trubisky was a reach for the Bears. And so when it didn't work out, people didn't go, how the hell did that happen? When they drafted him, they said, this is what's going to happen. And it did. But I don't think people felt that way about Sam Darnold. People felt that way about Josh Rosen. Like, he wasn't going to work out, and he didn't. Josh Allen, I think people surprised people.
Mm-hmm.
Surprised a lot of people, I should say. So, I don't know. I just feel like it's such an inexact science, Matt, that I always want to get excited about a new quarterback because it revives the whole league. It changes all the narratives around. It gives all kinds of crazy storylines. It's just the RG3 experiment for me was extremely disappointing. I felt like here was a guy who was going to revolutionize the position. And just the way it went down made me think, you know, just don't fall in love with these guys too soon. It's too hard a position to stay healthy at. It's too hard a position to have continued success at.
Bob, my heart might get broken because I look at Tua and Kyler Murray and Justin Herbert, and my heart, it swoons, Bob. It swoons.
Yeah, I hear you. But it is swoony. There's no doubt. It is swoon-worthy. I think of all those guys, Kyler Murray is the most exciting. There's no question about that. I hope Lamar Jackson works out. I hope he turns out to be as good as he could be. Just because
he's
positioned differently, you know, just because it's something different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's like when he just, you've seen the regression. The passing game isn't there. Even his explosive runs isn't working out. I hope this is not the case of the defense has figured out the Ravens' voodoo on offense and Baltimore's got no answer. Because I agree with you. What we saw last year was this incredible offense, but the numbers have dropped so much. It's just shocking to see the Ravens.
You know what amazes me about the NFL, Matt, and you understand me much better than I do, but maybe more so than any other sport, whatever innovation there appears to be, it doesn't matter. It will get figured out, and the only thing you really need is a good quarterback. Like than any other league, like basketball is substantially changed. It's become much more positionless. It used to be just get a big center. Now that's probably the last thing you need. You know, baseball is played differently, the way that arms are managed, like, you know, hockey is down that road. But I feel like football will never change. Get a good offensive line, get a great quarterback, and be decent on defense with takeaways. Have a positive turnover differential. You know, do well on third downs.
Yep.
Like, and that's it. Like, that's it. Like, the game's going to be that way for the next 1,000 years.
If you can complete a pass on 3rd and 8 for 9 yards on a above average level, you're going to do a lot of winning.
Yeah. Yeah. And red zone efficiency.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Red zone's a big one. Hey, we got like 2 minutes left here, Bob.
We have 2 minutes left.
Ah, look what you did there. So I'm going to throw some prostitute movies at you. You ready?
It's okay. Yeah, go.
The Florida Project.
Never seen it.
Eastern Promises.
So good.
Leaving Las Vegas.
Never seen it.
Oh, True Romance.
Mmm, nice.
Mighty Aphrodite.
Yeah, great one.
Unforgiven.
Hmm, wow, off the board, nice.
Then you got Taxi Driver.
Yes.
Yeah. Monster.
Great one, yep.
And then a couple of Midnight Cowboy, Night Shift, and Risky Business.
Okay, I'm going to throw one more in there. All great films, at least the ones I've seen. You may not have seen it, but 1971, Alan J. Pakula directed, Donald Sutherland, Jane Fonda, the movie's called
Clute.
Clute. Clute is a great film. Yep. I might go watch it today. I have it in my PVR.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess we're done, Matt. It's nice. Okay, so now that you're back to doing movie stuff again, let's build the movie questions back in.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
Doing them. We should be doing them on the pod. Give me 4. I'll research them. There's not a lot of sports right now. Fascinated to see what happens with the Raptors this offseason. Trepidatious, but fascinated.
I'm just curious to see where they play.
Yeah. Looks like it's going to be Tampa.
Yep.
Well, yeah, if it's not here, I guess it doesn't matter. I just want them to be happy, Matt.
Yeah, wherever they're most comfortable.
You know, I got my goal. I'm going to get a picture of Kyle and put it on my desk because he's got the physique I want. he was a pudgy guy around 6 feet tall. I can relate. If I can get his physique, like, I can never get the Kendall Gill body. If I can just get the Kyle Lowry body, I'll post it on Instagram. I'll post a shirtless picture on Instagram if I can get 80% to Kyle.
You mean on the Macko and Cause Instagram account?
You know, it's a great follow. I recommend it to everyone.
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.